This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. I've had quite a time recently with a pair of Baltimore Orioles who've discovered their images on quite a few of our windows, and I thought it might be helpful to talk about ways I've tried to keep this from happening. Birds in the frenzy of breeding season can think that their image in the rearview mirror of your car or the window reflection on your house or garage is a rival for their territory, and they can spend a lot of energy and time fighting that rival and not tending to nest building and laying eggs. In our house, this is a surprise for me because most all of our windows have netting over them to keep bird collisions to as close to zero as I can. But this pair was oblivious to the netting in the kitchen window and did battle anyway. I taped pieces of newspaper on the bottom part of the windows on the outside, which did work, sort of, but then I realized I had to remove the handy perch that was there for them to launch their attacks, so that was done. And then, not to be deterred for too long, I saw the female going after the basement window, behind lots of shrubs, generally not a factor for birds, but she had found her rival there. So I soaped that one on the outside as I could get at it with no trouble. Good old lava soap did the trick. Got out my sponge, wet it, soaped up that sponge, and patted it all over the window, and she really couldn't see her image anymore. Then I thought it was all over, but no, our car, which we had parked for a couple of days away from the house, to my horror, had a cascade of droppings, copious droppings all along both sides, front and rear doors covered, as the birds had used it to perch, and then relieved themselves as they fought valiantly for their territory. It was a waterfall, a cascade of whitewash. I wish I had taken a photo. No one would believe it. So a good wash and moving the car did the trick. I wonder, when did these birds have time to find so much food to produce so much whitewash? So I hope it's all over now. As the breeding season rolls on, this kind of behavior and the hormones that produce it will wane. And now I will read from a book I love, Walk When the Moon is Full, the May and June chapters by Frances Hammerstrom. She was a great Wisconsin pioneering biologist, a student of Aldo Leopold, and if you aren't familiar with her, please do look at the archive podcasts of Natural Wonders at WDRT.org for so much more about her. She was an astounding person, and you'll be happy to learn more about her. Frances Hammerstrom, Hammerstrom. She wrote lots of books and did research on a myriad of creatures, raptors and prairie chickens and sharp-tailed grouse, and the list goes on and on. In the introduction of this book, Walk When the Moon is Full, this story is about two real children, Alan and Elva, who called their father Hammy and their mother Fran. They lived on a 240-acre farm in Wisconsin and longed to go exploring at night. Elva the younger liked to climb trees. Animals trusted her to come very close, and her keen ears heard the faintest sounds. Alan had a small but sensitive nose that found and remembered smells, just as his mind remembered facts. He liked to find things out. Fran promised the children that she would explore with them 12 times every month when the moon was full for a whole year. Then Alan laughed. "The moon is full 13 times a year." Hammy and Alan laughed because Fran didn't even know the moon is full every 28 days. Each time they walked in the moonlight, they found something new. Sometimes they found animals eating, playing, or fighting. Once Hammy took the whole family to the city, and they were surprised at what they found there, too. This book has 13 surprises. And now the May chapter. Where are we going tonight? Well, it's rather cloudy, and Alan had a splinter in his foot. Oh, please, we want to go. We could stay on the road. Alan said, I can hear the cars on the highway. Let's go there. To the highway, Alan? What a funny idea. But they did go toward the highway, past the marsh, with the singing frogs. Suddenly it started. A harsh, insistent call, such as no small animal could make. Do you still want to go to the highway, or shall we sneak up to that sound in the woods? Sneak it, both children whispered. Slowly they walked deep into the dark woods. A car passed on the highway. The sound stopped and the moon hid behind a small cottony cloud. Look, Elva said, a big bird. Then moonlight caught the fluffy down on a big owlet. His new grown-up feathers gleamed dark, peeking from his downy whitish body. His eyes, big in his round head, blinked and blinked again, slowly. Let's sit here and watch him. We can't stay long, or his parents won't come to feed him. They will be afraid of us, Fran explained. You see, he's calling for his supper. Then the baby owl stopped calling. It was looking toward the west. Soon they could hear the faint sound of a car coming. The headlights grew brighter and brighter. The owlet turned its head slowly as the car passed, watching it. And then, long after even sharp-eared Elva could no longer hear the car, the big, downy owlet looked east. They sat and watched. Again, the owlet stopped calling. Fran, said Elva, there's another car coming. The baby has turned its head. They listened. First there was silence, then a faint hum, and at last the car roared past. Some day when you both have cars and are driving at night, you can remember as you pass the woods in May that many baby horned owls are turning their heads as you go by. And that's the end of the May chapter. And now the June chapter. The children had been in bed for 2 hours, but Alan burst out of his bed to ask, what's going to happen tonight? Alan, I never know what's going to happen. Right now the clouds are over the moon. Do you still want to go walking? You promised us, wailed Elva. The moon is full even if we can't see it very well. You know it's full. Fran said, all right, I promised you. We'll go walking. Barefoot? Asked Alan. All right, barefoot. Their feet moved through the dew-laden grass. Barefoot, they moved through the darkness more slowly than they would have with shoes on. As they climbed down the steep slope into the marsh, fireflies flashed below them. Fran lay down in the deep grass to watch something she had never seen before, the flash signals of thousands of fireflies in an even layer above the water of the marsh. The fireflies had found just the right temperature for signaling each other. When they reached the marsh, the children ran ahead. Blinking lights flickered above them. Fran held Elva up so the carpet of fireflies lay below her, and then lowered her so fireflies hovered above her like a ceiling of lights. Alan and Elva slipped away in the darkness of the windless night. They were making unusually little noise. When they came back, wading in the shallow water, Fran found herself shivering. It's time to go home. To her surprise, both children said yes. As they clambered up the steep trail homeward, Fran offered to hold Elva's hand. No, Elva pulled her hand away. Both children were giggling. They plainly had a secret. Fran was puzzled until she and Hammy went to bed. When she turned the lights off, she found out what they'd been up to. The children had let fireflies go in the bedroom. Fireflies paraded over the bedside table, blinking their lights. And that's the end of the June chapter. I hope you see lots of fireflies. And going to a marsh would be a wonderful idea. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thanks for listening.